This is Roots Pod.
This ball in. It takes a ricochet. How about Sorrell? Just enough of a hand to it to keep it out.
All right, welcome into Roots Pod. Big week, maybe the biggest week in the history of Oakland Roots Sports Club. We've got on-field stuff to talk about, off-field stuff to talk about, and probably for the first time, the off-field stuff is reasonably close to being unalloyed good news. You know, we don't have caveats this time in the way we have in the past. So we'll talk about the off-field before we get to the on-field stuff. And I'm joined here by John and Peter to cover all of that great stuff. So let's just dive right in. The off-field news, the Oakland Roots, the Oakland Coliseum. John, what's the deal?
We're playing there.
All right, great.
One of the two teams are playing there officially. And yeah, what? Moving on. No, yeah, they.
If that is the deal, I mean, maybe we're just giving the bottom line here. I don't know.
No, I mean, it's been a nearly a year long in the making. Lindsey Behrens, the president, team president, announced that Roots and Soul were eyeing the Coliseum in November of last year. So what? Yeah, not a full year later. They are locking it down. A lot of us, you know, I expected this to happen, pretty well early into the process. I mean, it just made sense. The A's were leaving. The A's already had a pretty good rent, and I knew that Roots were going to still get a pretty good deal.
John, you reported that the rent at the Coliseum was going to be $3 million. Do you have any idea how that compares to what they're paying at Pioneer Stadium?
Oh, I'm not sure 100% off the top of my head what they are paying at Pioneer Stadium. I never got a firm number on that. I do know, however, that it is significantly less than what they were paying at Laney. So take that for whatever it's worth. The number is 3 million. That was even announced at the press conference, 3 million per year, which I think is pretty comparable to what the A's were paying for a full, how many games are in baseball? 81 home game season. So, $3 million divided over by 17. I mean, I think that's a pretty good deal for them. Definitely expensive, but it really allows them, in my opinion, to see what the peak of this team can be in terms of attendance. The footprint that they announced is 15,000 on any given game day. There will be some games that are marketed more than others. For instance, the home opener at the Coliseum is going to be well marketed. I mean, I've heard from a long time ago that the marketing budget for that opening game in particular is going to be very, very high. So much high that I wish they spent some of it on a player or two. As I posed the question to people at the press conference, like, does this allow you to see your peak? I don't think they really understood it. They're like, oh, well, I think the peak just continues growing. I said, more so attendance. I think this is really the opportunity we see of what popularity Oakland Roots can be with all of the avenues that lead into the stadium, the freeway, the BART train specifically, even Amtrak. So I think the Coliseum is really an interesting experiment.
All right, that's about the size of things there. Huge news. I assume we'll find out more about this as we get closer to next season, but it's nice to know that that's on the table. And, you know, I think at the beginning of the season, right, we said, Peter, you said this especially, goal for this year is to get to next year and play at the Coliseum. And while we might have additional goals now in terms of footballing success, I think we can say with 95% certainty that those main goals have been achieved. So that's good. Things are looking up there. Now, this was not the only major off-field bit of news for the USL. And Peter has requested some special time here on the pod for a rant about perhaps the other large news item in the USL this week. So please, Peter, the floor is yours.
Yeah, so there was an announcement yesterday, speculated last week, that Lexington is going to be joining the USL Championship next year. And I am seeing both on Twitter and on Reddit, people are mad that Lexington are joining the USL Championship despite being the bottom-ranked team in USL League One. But we don't actually have promotion and relegation. There's no, like, this isn't breaking the rules. And it's like, if they have the money to field a USL Championship team, if they can be put in the USL Championship, which I assume they have had to tell the league, we are going to have the TV broadcast, we are going to have a stadium, we're going to comply with the collective bargaining agreement, which means they're going to have an expensive roster, then what the hell is the point of having them play one more season with all of those things in USL League One, where they would completely run away with it? Like, it's just a completely wasted season from their point of view, where they're going to be running out a USL Championship quality roster in USL League One, not on television, or rarely on television, not ever on CBS, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Like, Wolfgang Prentice does not make the field for the Roots unless there are multiple injuries and is a top-level USL League One player. If, like, Lexington has to keep playing until they win USL League One to be allowed to come up, it's just ridiculous. Anyway, I maybe oversold this rant. I don't have 10 minutes. I got to work my way up to being the Rick Bayless of USL, of Oakland Roots Media. But Aaron keeps rolling his eyes every time I say the Rick Bayless. But I do specifically mean the fusion chef.
There's no fusion to what he does.
Isn't there?
No. He is straight Mexican.
Oh, you know, it's the thing is that I've only eaten at this restaurant that's in the food court in that the building in downtown Chicago.
Oh, at the Macy's?
Yeah, the one that's on the top floor or whatever. Yeah, anyway. So it's fusion in the sense that the restaurant sells other food. It's just not his. Look. People want USL to be operating as promotion relegation, like, on moral grounds, while the rules don't actually support that. And it's just like aggravating to me to see people be wrong on the internet, as I'm sure you can all relate to.
That is the worst.
Can't relate to it at all.
John doesn't use the internet.
Yeah. Well, it is probably worth noting, I think, that Lexington is about to open a new stadium themselves, which is supposed to be pretty nice. And I assume that is a catalyst for their move. That should be, I mean, it's an unusual market to be adding to a league. I can't imagine that Lexington is one of the top 52 media markets, but hey, if they're making it work, we might as well accept them.
Well, I don't think that I understand that ticket sales do not drive revenue in this league, but there are successful USL Championship teams, or apparently successful USL Championship teams, that play in small markets because, like, you're only trying to sell 8,000 tickets. You know, that is primarily about driving interest. You don't need a 10 million person metropolitan area to support one of these teams. I think that Oakland is probably well on the bigger side of, like, the media market, even setting aside the greater Bay Area media market, just the East Bay. Like, Oakland is huge by USL Championship standards. And it's just a matter of, like, building the operation. So, I mean, Lexington, I think, could clearly do this. It has all these, like, built-in rivalries. And I don't know. If they can comply with the collective bargaining agreement, they will be able to field a competitive team. As you can see, the Roots do that with almost no additional money in their roster.
Those are all good points, especially the stadium part. The stadium part is the big catalyst, and we see that with Brooklyn FC joining, and also in the future, Omaha, who was very, you know, on the other side, was very successful, but they still, no matter what of their success, no matter how many times they make it to the finals and how well they do, it's all, you still don't get promoted. You have to have the stadium. And they have plans to build the stadium. I think it opens for ahead of the 2026 season. And they're going to be a great team to have. And, you know, just like you said, like it, your success on the field doesn't matter. You know, Roots were almost winless in NISA before coming into the USL Championship. Were we supposed to go to League One and prove that we could be a successful team there? Like, no.
One other question I wanted to just throw out there. We have two teams coming in next season, right? Lexington and Brooklyn, both of whom seem like they're destined for the Eastern Conference, which means that somebody from the East has to move to the West, or we'd come up with some new way of doing things. Who would move West, though?
Just give us Brooklyn. like in terms of total travel time to get there, it's probably faster to get to Brooklyn than it is to Lexington.
Oh, no doubt. But where I thought you were going with is Birmingham, because they seem like the only other team that could feasibly make the move.
Well, and that puts them in a conference with Memphis, which they obviously should
which
be.
Which makes a little bit more sense, yeah. Starts to look weird on the map, though.
John Morrissey, you know, who we take all of our opinions from, was advocating for three divisions. Yeah. And I think that is actually the best answer.
And then when you have a championship, you just have two fields and three teams, and there's like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, like three-way chess, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, or you, I mean, I don't know what you do. Maybe you need to go to like four divisions instead of three divisions, and then do it the old way that like the Pacific Conference plays the Mountain Conference and then sends one person. I mean, it's not the most competitively balanced thing, but I was looking at this while we're sort of on the topic. The Roots record at home against Eastern Conference opponents this season is staggering. They have 10 points out of a possible 12 against entirely playoff teams from the East, one of which is the best team in the league, like undoubtedly the best team in the league. And I think, you know, and that hasn't always been the case, you know, it's only looking at this season. In prior seasons, that 3,000 mile trip has not necessarily inured to the Roots' benefit, but like, I think you already have a currently balanced schedule is imbalanced in that, like, the Roots get Louisville in Oakland and Sacramento get Louisville in Louisville, and the Roots win that game and Sacramento lose their game, despite the fact that, like, Sacramento played way better than the Roots did. Or,
arguably,
have a higher ceiling, I think.
A 4-3 loss at Louisville is potentially a more impressive result for Sacramento than the 1-0 win at home.
Yeah. And yeah. I mean, again, I also think that the Roots are set up right now to punish teams that fly 3,000 miles, because the Roots are like, all right, we're just going to run the whole game and you're going to get tired and you're going to make mistakes, which is awesome. Great. Screw them. But it didn't work. It didn't work when the Roots had to go to Pittsburgh.
Well, and this is a great segue, because speaking of punishing teams that travel 3,000 miles, we're coming to you following Oakland Roots 3-1 win over Loudoun United. Loudoun United representing the people who live within eyeshot of Dulles International Airport. They looked just a step behind the entire game, I thought. The Roots got on the board early, Babacar and Jai in the 24th minute, poaching one from Gagi Margvelashvili. Loudoun was able to get one back early in the second half, but Memo Diaz to Johnny Rodriguez, are the merry men of the Oakland Roots, came up big again to put Roots up 2-1, and then Trayvon Reed put it away in the 81st minute. 3-1, Oakland returns to a tie for second place. Now, they have a vastly worse goal differential than Sacramento Republic, with whom they are tied, but that's like the 12th or 13th tiebreaker in the USL. So it might not matter that Sacramento has a positive 10 goal differential and Oakland's is currently negative 7. But here we are, very late into the season, and Oakland is in shouting distance of first place. But to your point, how much of this do we say, you know what, that was a lot? We can lay a lot of this at the feet of the fact that Loudon had to travel cross country.
Well, I think that it made a difference. I'll let John have a turn to speak in a second, but he was too slow on muting. I think it made a difference, and it plays into the Roots' biggest strength right now, which is this press, this really aggressive press. But like, Glinton had to decide that that's how he wanted the team to run, and I think he does it because I think a logical reason why he might be doing this is because this league involves massive travel distances, and it's a really good way of beating a team that you were in better shape than. It also takes advantage of the fact that every team at every level in this league makes mistakes, even Louisville, who are the class of the league. And the press is a great way to manufacture those mistakes that you can then punish. And then, you know, you get these one-on-one situations, 50% of the time you score, and, you know, if you're scoring, you're winning. Anyway, John, what do you think? Actually, just one more thing.
No, I mean, I think, the travel in this league is a interesting factor. I mean, it's commented on every off season, every media day. You know, you never know what's going to happen on any given game day, and if you could take advantage of that, yeah, sweet. But I think above all, though, I mean, they played a really strong second half, and Loudon had some moments in that first half, didn't make clear contact. They had a couple chances from right in the middle of the box, and their shot trailed high. But I think the second half, I mean, Roots really showed, other than giving up a goal in the 54th minute, after that, I mean, what clinicality. I mean, that pass from Memo to Johnny was, you know, something that they work on all the time. And it's interesting to see how just often these two connect. Even the last game when Johnny assisted Memo, like, maybe the travel did play a factor in that, but I mean, when you play a good game, you play a good game, and that's what they need right now. I mean, I was thinking of it was the first game after a 2-week break, right? And my thoughts always are going to go back to the last 11 games of last season. And they looked, I mean, they came out of that break last year with a win. I think it was like 2-1 over Colorado, but it wasn't like too convincing, and then it degraded from there. I mean, this team this year, on the contrary, they look like they're continuously hitting highs, and they're continuously building this fluidity and this energy about them that I have so much more confidence in this year's team compared to last. I mean, yeah, a lot to prove, but it's nice to hear Gavin in the interviews, you know, reminding, like, yeah, I was there. I was a part of that collapse last year. So he remembers what happened. I'm sure, you know, it does something for the mentality of not just him, but a lot of the players who also experience that, because this, as we've seen in this league, things can turn really quickly.
I was thinking this when you were mentioning the tie breaks, Aaron, that, like, yeah, the Roots goal differential is -7. And I think what that reflects is that at various times this season, the Roots have been lousy. But
specifically two times.
You're right.
Right. I mean, yeah. Those two games are the entire thing.
Well, the two stretches. I mean, there was the stretch right before Noah got fired. And then they dug themselves out of that hole, and then they completely redug that hole under Clinton in those two games. But, like, we don't have to like hem and haw about whether or not the Roots were bad at certain points this season. They were. But this same group of guys has also been good. Unobjectionably good. And I think right now that's kind of what they look like. It's sort of one game because the Miami game didn't look good. It was 3 points and not looking good. But like, I hope that the goal differential doesn't matter at the end of the season for a tiebreak, because right now I feel like it's not really reflective of what the team looks like. You know, if the playoffs started right now, you wouldn't really see the Roots going in and say, this is a team with a -7 goal differential. They're going to play like a team with a -7 goal differential. You're going to say, this looks like a team that's won 7 of their last 12 or whatever.
Yeah, I largely agree with that. They have a -8 goal differential from 2 games very recently, and that is the sum total, really, of the deficit they have. I don't like when people are like, well, if you take out this one stretch of the season where they were at their worst, this team was pretty good. You know, I think you have to include all the information, but I agree. Most of the data points are good. Let's talk about the one kind of wrinkle here that we've seen in the last couple of matches, the reversion to a back three formation, which was, it was interesting against Miami, but also the team that was put on the field was a little bit unusual. I think if we're going to stick with it, it's probably going to look a lot like what we saw against Loudon. And I'm curious to get your guys' takes on this shift, because we spent a lot of time talking about, hey, maybe this team should move to a back four. And for my own part, that was because we just had a midfield that got stranded. You know, those two guys in the middle were just lost in this attempt to play the ball down the flanks. I'm not entirely sure what with the forwards. And what I was noticing from the stands against Loudon is that one of the ways we seem to have countered this is really the same way we countered the weakness in a 4-2-3-1, which is just to put center backs literally everywhere. But the two midfielders were playing, especially out of possession, were playing right behind the front three. I mean, literally just right behind them. And we didn't have our wing backs bombing forward in the way that we had seen last year. Instead, what we saw is they hung back a little bit, and it was Gagge who spent a lot of time marauding forward. I don't know if that's an opponent-specific thing, but I thought it gave a lot more stability to the shape. And if what we saw against Loudon wasn't a mirage, I am totally fine moving back to something like that. But I'm curious what your guys' reaction was to seeing that shift over the last couple of games and how you think we are going to look moving forward. And John, you were sort of stepped on last time by Peter, so you can go first.
Well, I mean, with the system, it's hard to devise, because I think, I mean, Gagge is such a big part of this. I have to look back to see how many times Gagge was deployed in that back four. But I mean, if my memory is correct, I mean, it would have had to be a few times. But he's been such a factor in all of this, and he was our player of the match last game, just for, like you mentioned there, just stepping up into the midfield. But, you know, much more than that, being that pressing action from the center back spot that he was doing before his injury. And that's exactly what made me think he was the best center back on the team so far this season, is just his ability to read the passes to the opposing forwards, get a foot in there, and start an attack the other way. The same can be said about Cam Riley, but I think he does that much more effectively in the central midfield spot than he does at the center back spot. So in regards to the 3-4-3, the 4-2-3-1, I mean, I feel like I'm guessing each time. So, I mean, if it really does seem to be opponent dependent, these last two games they've run it correct, and these last two games have been much more playing without the ball, having less passes than the opponent and less possession time, which I'm fine with. I mean, they're doing a lot in that. What did they finish with? 39% of the ball in this last match. So if that continues, yeah, great. We'll see how this transforms against Rhode Island, who, you know, it's another long trip. How do they attack that one? But it's also much different than the trip to Miami, in that Miami was like 90 degrees and humid. Rhode Island is I think I looked up the weather. It's going to be 75, 80 and around the same humidity as here, maybe a little more. But does that play a factor into how they plan? I mean, Gavin mentioned that the weather in Miami affected how they plan for things. Does the travel time reflect on that, or is it just going to be focused on Rhode Island, who have some weapons and have been performing? So how do you attack that? I have to admittedly look up more how Rhode Island approaches things. Peter, you might know more if you've gotten your preview started.
Well, I think that Rhode Island are at least going to see this as a winnable game, and they're going to try to take the game to the Roots, I think, in a way that Miami didn't. And I think that it was difficult for the Roots to go there and try to give the ball to Miami and play on the break, because Miami are helpless. And so it's like, you know, so it kind of just ended up with both teams kind of looking bad. And luckily the Roots came out on top. But I think that the Roots are going to be able to, they're going to be able to go to Rhode Island and tell Rhode Island, take the ball, and we'll see what happens. And, you know, unfortunately, I think that kind of blew up with the game in Pittsburgh, where the Roots, when they won the ball, could never do anything with it. But hopefully they've learned from that, and then they won't run into the same trap. In terms of the formation, you know, I wonder, part of the model of defender that it looked like the Roots went out and got are these ball playing guys. You know, Riley clearly, but Logue as well. You know, they talked when they signed him about his ability on the ball going forward. And I wonder if the idea with this back three is that it's sort of like a 4-3-3, and the defensive midfielder is whichever of Logue, Hackshaw, or Gagi decides to step up into the midfield at any given time. And I think the default assumption is that it's sort of Hackshaw, because he's also the person who's most likely to get completely smoked on the offside, you know, on a failed offside trap. Hackshaw's the most likely to get completely left in the lurch. He doesn't have to be there. He can step further forward. And he had a lot of really good distribution of the ball. I mean, Memo was wide open on his assist to Johnny, but the, you know, Hack turned and found him, and it was a reasonably long pass across to him. And what, you know, I think it was a relative, you know, I'm going to use the word easy by the standard of professional athletes, not that I could do it, but I think it was an easy pass to Memo, but he still spent a crisp pass to Memo that allowed him to turn around and hit Johnny in stride. And I, you know, that's Hackshaw's distribution. That hockey assist is meaningful. So anyway, I think that the 4-3-3 stresses, or the 3-4-3 or whatever, stresses me out a little bit less if the idea is to make use of our center back's ability to play the ball forward.
So I'm gathering that what you guys have taken from the last couple of games is actually not the formation change, but actually the philosophical shift, that the Roots are going to do everything they can to be out of possession, that they're going to be compact and try to hit you on the break. I mean, especially, I think, to your point about Hackshaw, Peter, I thought he was playing very deep. You know, I don't think there was even an attempt against Loudon, at least not a regular attempt, to play an offside trap. He was playing very deep, and that's consistent with a team that expects not to be in possession, or who doesn't want to be in possession. So I guess that'll be something to watch going forward, if that's the wrinkle the Roots have come up with to kind of deal with whatever it was that happened leading up to those Pittsburgh and Sacramento matches that went so poorly. There has been a shift, and it has been positive so far, right? It's 2 wins and 2, and it'll be interesting. It's something to watch, obviously. How do the Roots philosophically approach this match against Rhode Island? Because as you say, Peter, this is a team that's going to be able to take the game to the Oakland Roots. They sit sixth in the East, 7 wins, 11 draws. You know, that they've got some goal scorers, guys you've heard of. Albert Dequa plays for this team now. Who else? Koke Vegas, I think, is in goal for them. Frank Nodarce has 5 goals from his defender position this year. I mean, this is a team with guy with USL veterans on it, and they're kind of playing like it. They've actually started to play pretty well recently. There's six wins, 2 draws, and a loss in their last 9, and those wins include a 3-goal away win against Louisville City, 3-0 win over El Paso. That's 5-2 against Louisville City, 3-0 against El Paso, 3-0 against Hartford. Right, this team is playing very well right now, and it's a tough time to have to travel to Providence. I assume Providence. Actually, are there others? I guess there's at least one other city in Rhode Island, but I'm just going to assume they play in Providence to take this team on. But, you know, it's a good litmus test, I suppose, right? Is this turnaround, what is this turnaround actually, how real is it, I guess, is the question. And we should know a lot more about what we can expect from the Roots going forward and how we should feel about this Loudoun match after this Rhode Island game finishes, I think.
It will be a good litmus test. I'm curious to see, what I'm most curious to see is if this team can get some goals somewhere other than Johnny. If Trayvon Reed can take one of those kinds of shots a game or get those breakaway runs like he did at the end, just put it away. You know, that's something I would love to see because, I mean, it's a little bit staggering if you go to the stats there and you see Johnny Rodriguez and I think, gosh, like 5, 6, or 7 players have 1 goal and then the next best is Cedeno, who is gone. So there's going to have to be some goals from somewhere else. But you know, Johnny has just been amazing and he's really proving that you can build around him and you can win with him and he can be a successful striker in this league. He has 13 goal contributions right now and that ties last year's goal contributions in about 400 less minutes. Even more staggering, Memo Diaz has 5 assists, which matches last year in about 1,200 less minutes. So, I mean, that's a testament to those two putting in the extra work. Even after practice, Gavin Glinton said that those two take extra time after practice and just work on crosses and connecting to each other. And that's what, you know, that's what builds success. That's what builds camaraderie on the field. So to get that out of those two is amazing.
Well, looking ahead to this weekend, so the Roots have Rhode Island. This is not the best weekend for the Roots to necessarily pick up points on Western Conference rivals. We're recording this on Tuesday. Midweek, New Mexico plays Tulsa, which means most likely Tulsa, who currently sit in 7th, are going to drop points. And then Tulsa plays Memphis at the weekend, which means someone that the Roots are in a race with for a playoff spot is going to drop points in that game. Otherwise, mostly the Western Conference is playing the Eastern Conference, except Orange County is playing El Paso and Sacramento is playing El Paso midweek. The other big opportunity is New Mexico playing Monterey Bay. You would, again, expect New Mexico to take the points from Monterey Bay there. And so the possibility either that the Roots won't lose ground if they drop points or will gain ground on someone who matters this weekend with a positive result.
Let's talk about whether we think the Roots are going to come up with a positive result this weekend. Exactly how positive are we talking, John?
Well, man, looking at Rhode Island's run-in, I mean, they've scored 3 goals in like 7 of the last 10 matches or something. Like, it's ridiculous. So I'm leaning to a high-scoring affair, and I think that would be fun to watch some goals. It will be stressful to write about on the live blog, but I'm going to say that it's going to be a, yeah, if you got to do it, you got to score the ball. 3-2. 3-2 win. Score the ball, score goals, same thing.
If you want to do it, you have to score the ball. I'm going...
I mean, that's technically right, right? Like,
yeah, I guess so. Yeah,
technically. That's the best kind of correct.
It is a ball.
I think
Did you gonna... say it is a ball? That wasn't the part that... sorry, Peter, go ahead.
I think I'm going to say 2-1 because most soccer games end 2-1, right? To the Roots, I guess.
Yeah, I think that we're in for some whiplash over the next few weeks, to be honest. I mean, not just this trip to Rhode Island, but Roots also have a trip to North Carolina and a trip to Hartford coming up, and a trip to Memphis. That's the next few away games. And it's just, that's rough. That's really tough to have to do at the end of the season. I have a feeling we're going to find out that once again, 3,000 miles is just, that's just hard on an athlete's body. So, and it'll make us reconsider how optimistic we are after that Loudon match. But nevertheless, I will predict a 4-3 Oakland Roots win. It looks like Rhode Island likes to score three goals. But I think the more the Roots play with whatever system they've got, you know, I the more the comfortable they get with this new approach to the game, I think they're going to be very sick. And they have the guys to play on the break, too. You know, they've got a couple of guys who can put in a long ball, and Rasmussen, Rasmussen's made some real pinpoint crosses at points this season. Obviously, Memo has been fantastic from that outside back position. Hackshaw is capable of it. Gagi is apparently willing to pop up in very unexpected places. And, you know, if you're playing on the break a lot, that really, I think, is that benefits a guy like Cherie, who we haven't seen much in the last couple of games. But I would imagine that his services will be useful if Oakland continues to play like this. So, and gosh, I think this is the best system for a guy like Trayvon Reed, whose best attribute by a distance is how fast he is.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, that set up his goal in this past week. So
frustratingly, he shot that, the easy one right into the chest of the goalie.
Totally flubbed that.
One would have fucking scored on David Raya. You
that
know,
was incredible.
Like, he put it in a window the size of the center of an archery target. He's a baffling player to watch.
So, I think that if the Roots can put all that together, 4-3. Let's do it. 4-3. And John will have a heart attack covering this game. So big weekend for soccer. Your major European leagues will be back. You might be getting up at 4:30 in the morning on Saturday to begin watching soccer. And then this match happens at what, 4:30 in the afternoon here? So that's, by the end of that, that's probably 14 straight hours of soccer, which sounds like a pretty good day to me. Hopefully we'll catch you somewhere in Oakland for the last little bit of that as Oakland takes on Rhode Island FC. If you see us out there, come say hi. And until then, up the Roots.